Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice.
Hello, and welcome to Varsity's Roundtable Talk. My guest today is Lori Orlov, a leading expert in aging and technology and the founder of Aging and Health Technology Watch. Lori has spent the last 15 years analyzing how innovation can help older adults stay independent, safe, and connected. Lori, thank you so much for joining us today, and welcome to Roundtable Talk.
Thank you.
So can you tell us a bit about yourself, your background, how you became a leading voice in aging and technology? And as I mentioned, as we were just chatting beforehand, I've been really looking forward to this. I've admired your work for quite some time. So tell us a little about yourself.
So I spent many years in IT. I ran IT departments for a long time. This is, you know, after I finally figured out what an IT department did. And then after that, I left the IT world and I joined Forrester Research and became an analyst about technology in general and finished up there as an analyst about chief information officers. I then quit that. And by that time in my life, I had an aging mother and an aging mother-in-law. And I was surprised at how ignorant and stupid I was in terms of the caregiving decisions about my mother. So I started looking around and I discussed this with Mary Furlong, in fact, who's pretty well known in this space. And I said, you know, it doesn't seem like there's an analyst focused on this space. This was in 2008, 2009. Doesn't seem like there's an analyst. And she said, absolutely, there's no analyst. Since some people have joined in since then, but there's no analyst. And so I published a market overview in 2009. I gave my first speech. I took on my first paying client who had a wearable chest strap for fall detection, and that got me going. And so that's what I've been doing now for the past 15 or 16 years. It's a business. I charge companies money for advice. I do webinars. I do a variety of things. I've written some long reports for pay, but now the long reports pretty much I fund myself because I pick topics that interest me. I decide who to interview, and then so it goes. Much easier than actually writing for somebody else.
That's right. And then it becomes kind of a thought leadership piece that can advance your own brand.
Yep.
So that kind of is your journey. Was there anything specific that inspired you to start Aging Technology Health or Aging and Health Technology Watch?
Like I said, it was the ignorance about how to care for my mother. And I discovered that other people in the technology space for this particular topic also joined it because of a situation with their own parent. This industry, the age-related technology industry, is filled with people who have struggled to care for their own parents, and they started companies about caregiving, they started companies about senior living, started companies about technology, health monitoring, fall detection. All of those people have a story. And my story was, I didn't know what I was doing in terms of the care of my mother. And I decided to look around for research. I couldn't find any. So I said, I'm going to write it. And I was encouraged to do that by Mary Furlong. And that's how I gave my first speech. And I was off and running.
That's great. And you might know Dr. Robin Stone, who is at Leading Age. And I know she has talked about this as an accidental career for many people. You know, most people don't. You've probably heard her talk about that. But people don't necessarily seek out aging services. And once they find it, they love it.
Yeah. Usually what happens is people have a crisis. An incident happens, whether it's a fall or dementia or a person can't live alone anymore. It's a whole series of crises, probably a pretty long list, that precipitate a decision. And hopefully the families agree on the decision. That is actually pretty ideal. Sometimes they don't. And sometimes they say, no, mom doesn't need that. Dad doesn't need that. We're all good. And then another incident happens and so forth. So it's, in some sense, it's a crisis precipitated field. But once you get past the crisis aspect of it, there's a lot of work going on today to think more proactively and prevent a lot of crises in advance. And for people who think ahead, it's a good time to be in thinking about the space.
Great point. So how do you hope Aging and Health Technology Watch influences decision makers, whether it's in senior living, tech development, policy, et cetera?
Well, I have tried to make it clear that what I do is a business-to-business offering, that I do not write for consumers. And pretty much the businesses that should be interested in what I write are pretty much interested in it. That could be home care, it could be senior living, it could be largely the technology companies or the investors in the technology companies. So those people are all interested in this space. And then I do a lot of whining on my website. I whine about things that I think need to change. And, you know, I've done a fair amount of whining about, you know, why are we still thinking about fall detection when we could actually do fall prevention? What's wrong with thinking about strength training in the legs and bodies of seniors so that they don't actually fall? You know, that's my whining. I do a lot of that.
I love how, you know, the language you choose, because it's really more advocating, being provocative, getting people to think, but I love that, whining.
So that's I do influence decision makers, and people, generally speaking, find me one way or the other. Whether they want to pay me, that's a whole other kettle of potatoes, but they do read, I'm pretty well read in what I write. My reports tend to get a lot of readers, and so in that sense, I'm visible enough. There's not too, actually really too much. It's funny. I've talked to people in the company I used to work for, Forrester, and then Gartner doesn't do. They, for whatever reason, those companies do not seem to see this as a market space that they want to be in. Tech for older adults or tech about older adults. I think they're silly because if you look at the baby boomer thing, you know, the oldest baby boomer is turning 80 in January. You know, if you were to a thinker and know that they have all the money, you'd That's start right. to think of this as a market space. It doesn't matter because people will seek what they need and hopefully they'll find it. The problem is the main referral source today in the technology market for older adults is still Google. And hopefully something changes in that regard.
Yep. Absolutely. So you've talked about the need for suites over one-off gadgets and aging tech. What does an ideal suite look like for older adults, and why is the shift so important?
Well, I use the analogy of the suites for users of PC software many years ago. The idea that you would actually buy a spreadsheet application, but you wouldn't buy a word processor along with it, that became seemed crazy after a while. I say, why is that? So then smart companies combined technologies into suites. And they sold suites. Lotus had SmartSuite, and you know that Microsoft sort of owns the suite market in many ways. In this market, the problem is many of the small companies still think of themselves as unique enough that they're not, they don't want to partner until they have to. And the idea of a suite is not that you actually have to integrate your software, although that was true of Lotus ultimately and Microsoft. You don't have to integrate the software. You have to sit alongside of it. And the idea of having a suite means that you can have offerings that sit alongside each other. And most importantly, follow the needs of an older adult over the over their lifetime. So I've suggested suites in the area of health and chronic conditions that start out with symptom management and then remote monitoring and medication management and hearing loss and regulatory issues. I've suggested a mobility suite that includes exercise, devices about mobility, various products in that space, transport tools, and peer support if you have mobility issues. That's just an example. No need to pass data between them. That's my main point about suites. You do not have to exchange data. And I'm amazed at how steadfast some of the lone wolf players are, and why they think their offering is so important in its own little niche that they don't need a whole set of partners. But in the space that has anything to do with health, people are starting to see that adjacency matters and that people don't stay the same. And so as people progress through their life journey, they need more offerings in different categories. And so that's my point about suites.
Good, good. So many companies still build products in isolation, as you've said, emergency buttons, medication reminders. Why do you think the market has been slow to move toward the integrated platforms?
Well, I think one reason is that the resellers who sell those products. So let's just think about the personal emergency response pendant, I've fallen and I can't get up button. That is mostly sold by resellers. Home security resellers actually are the prominent reseller category. they don't actually care that much about the features of the specific product. Okay. And they don't tend to influence the market to change the product. What they do is they sell fear, and fear sells. And so the resellers have not forced a change. The standalone products have not done well. They need resellers. So it's that's a reseller driven industry.
Great point.
Some companies are starting to think about the need to carry multiple products, and you'll see some of the biggest ones in the personal emergency response space starting to think about adjacency, and they are starting to offer more adjacent products. And so I think that's pretty important. The idea that the customer needs to think about that, the customer's never going to think about that, right? The customer barely thinks about the problem they have right now. So it really is up to the resellers and the tech companies to seek others. I won't name the company, but the company that actually can detect disease in a toilet bowl based on something that's going on with you. My first sweet conversation was with him. And the main point was, this is not a standalone product. It's about health overall. And he sat there.
I'm sure, yeah, because everybody wants to believe in their own product and have that autonomy.
So. Yeah, they do. So anyway, that's how I've started to think about the importance of suites. And the most important thing to do is to go to the ARP website, the Innovation Labs website, and look at the startups that are on there. And there's whole bunches of them, and they're all basically offering standalone products. But if you stare at them for a while, you can see adjacency yourself.
Sure.
And it's if you have access and can influence ARP, which I certainly have tried to do, influence them to start working with those companies in combinations of offerings that would benefit older adults over time as things change. That would be really good.
Sure, sure. So we've talked about, you know, the adjacencies and integration and such, but how should innovators approach designing for older adults, especially when we move from a mindset of special needs to more seamless tech systems?
So the special needs technologies, they do involve older adults. So, you know, wheelchairs, mobility devices, and things hearing related, you know, older adults are often involved in the testing of those. What's not involving older adults is a standard product set that you and I all use every day, whether it's a phone or a tablet or a PC or any of these other things. Those things go into the market with their software, which is, this is really a software issue. They go into the market with their software and have not included older adults. There's a video somewhere online of a gentleman from Google, a young guy who went over to ARP and was getting the opinion of people about what should be thought about in designing for products in the older adult age range. They weren't very old, but they were certainly older than him. He was very young. And he was kind of flabbergasted. The interesting thing about that is he was like, really? So it seems to me, and if you look at the average age in Google, the average age in Meta, and some of these companies, particularly Google, stands out in my mind, it's fairly young. No wonder, but they all have parents and they all have grandparents. And I would say, innovate, it's time. You don't want to sit with a device like I have many times and many other people do, trying to figure out how to do something. And if you've ever watched a person with an iPad, which I sat behind a guy in an airplane one time, and he was probably 75 or 80, and he was pounding here and there, looking for which part of this white space is anything going to happen on. There's no reason why little pop-ups couldn't occur that say, if you're looking to do X,
sure,
why not tap over there?
Sure,
that's
sure.
My issue with design today. It's insensitive to what's happening with the user base. And if you remember the user base, they have all the money. So
absolutely.
You should be inviting older adults prior to development, and they should invite them for testing.
Yep.
And that's my thought about that.
Well said. We did a series of groups partnering with Best Buy a few years back, and we did it in the stores before the stores opened. So it was, I think, at 8:30 in the morning. And they had associates there bringing technology over to the older adults that we were using, communicating with, and were participating in our groups. And it was fascinating for us, but also for the young, as you mentioned with Google, but the young people working in Best Buy, I think, to actually see people interacting with the tech. And their role wasn't to sell anything; it was just to, kind of facilitate. But it was still an amazing, I think,
yeah,
experience.
It's amazing, really, also how many people view product development as I design for myself. This product meets my needs, and therefore it's good. And if my neighbor in a couple cubicles away say, no, you have to add something, okay, I add it. But otherwise, it's designed for me, my age group, my peer group. And the fact that it's being used by people, and my great example really is the iPhone. The iPhone is very popular among older adults. Everywhere I go and I see people in their 60s or 70s, they're holding the iPhone. Now, the iPhone, unless you go into accessibility mode in the iPhone, you don't really know what to do.
Right.
Yep. What? So you can go to a training class, and there are training classes offered by AARP and senior centers around the country. But your first instinct when you take it out of the box, you open it up, unless you sit in the Apple store with the guy at the table, which a lot of people do, you don't know what to do.
Right. Yep. Just, kind of dive right in. So this is a question that we ask every roundtable guest. What are you looking forward to as you age?
Well, I'm already starting to do these things. What I do with my free time is I play the piano with another pianist. We play in assisted living facilities. We played in the hospital last week. We're very advanced pianists, and we've taking the piano lessons and studying the piano since we were children. So that's one
wonderful.
Of the things I do. I also volunteer at the hospital near here. I volunteer in the surgical waiting room. So as the family members come in with their relatives, or want to go see the relatives who are in the back just coming out of surgery, what have you, I escort them or I talk them down if
fantastic.
They're very nervous and that kind of thing. So I do that. And I'm very interested in exercise. And so I've, in the past number of years, I've become interested in strength training, which is the way that people are going to actually function as they age. It's going to keep them from falling down. Strength training is extremely important as you age. The ability to get out of a chair without holding the arms of a chair. If you see people holding the arms of the chair, they need to do strength training. You should be able to stand up. So that's what I do. I do a lot of exercise. I do some weight training. I walk when the weather is tolerable around here, which right now it's 97 degrees, so not that tolerable. But yeah. That's what I do.
Good, good. So what are some of the types of pieces you like to play on the piano?
So we play a lot of, 30s, 40s, and 50s type music. So my husband just went out and bought the book. It's called Double Agent, and it's about all the music that was written for Bond movies.
Okay, that's great.
So we're going to do those. We just did a whole program of patriotic music in the hospital and at assisted living for 4th of July. When we get closer to Christmas, we do a whole set of Christmas music. And in the middle, we have all kinds of other stuff that we like to play, including classical.
That's great. I'm sure people love it. That's great. So you recently released a report about the future of AI in home care. In the report, you mentioned the emergence of AI agents assigned to specific tasks within home care operations. What are some examples of these tasks, and how do AI agents enhance efficiency or care quality? And first of all, could you define for anybody listening who doesn't know what an AI agent is?
So an AI agent is software that's assigned to a specific task that uses some of the characteristics of AI, whether it's listening and responding or whether it's assisting with prediction and classification of something that's going on with the person. In healthcare, AI is helping doctors these days deal with symptoms and issues relative to disease. But an AI agent is more of a smaller module that is assigned to a specific task. And so call centers, for example, have agents, people agents who answer the call. There's now AI-enabled agents for most call centers, and they can prompt the person on the other end of the line for information that would enable them, the agent, the software agent, to enter it into a system. They can prompt for information if you're looking to hire and a recruiter comes to your website and a person comes to your website looking for a job. An AI agent can advise about the jobs that are available and offer suggestions and do all kinds of things that have taken people a long time to do. The other thing AI agents are doing now is documentation, which is probably the most unpleasant task that people have to do about whatever it is they're dealing with. So agents can help home care workers document their visit. And in fact, given a little bit of information, they can produce a care plan. And that's also true in senior living. They can produce a suggested care plan that you can then modify.
Sure, sure.
So that's the thing about AI agents.
Good. Now, you referenced recruiting, but onboarding in home care, I guess, is that the care models and that sort of thing as you're doing the intake?
Yes. Onboarding okay. is onboarding new employees or new potential care recipients or residents in the senior living.
Sure, sure. And you know, I know with AI, as we're looking at it, it always is important to make sure that we are looking at it carefully and that we're not just blindly following what AI brings back. How confident are you when it's developing care plans that it's accurate, that it's relevant, that it's appropriate?
So experts need to influence or help train the AI to do the right care plan. There's no such thing. While AI tools have inherited the entire internet, they've inherited all the material that's out there. Material that's specific, for example, to a senior living organization or to the care of particular types of individuals, that can be refined by people. And in fact, it is being refined by people. I think I wrote about that in the future of AI and senior living and care. It is refined by people that's specific to the organization of, you know, what they want the AI to do. Now, one of the main advantages of AI is if you get enough information about the circumstances of individuals, you can then predict behaviors of other individuals who share the same characteristics. And that's possible for people to do well if they look at enough information, but AI tools can do it much faster. So that's, I think, one of the interesting, and also one of the things that people told me about is a great idea. I don't know if people are actually doing it now, but as the person walks towards the door of the home, the home care worker walks towards the door of the home, they should from their phone be able to get suggestions about what to ask about, given what's known about the person who has engaged them in that home. And so if a new person is coming on to serve that home, they could actually advise them on suggestions, wound care, any other conditions that somebody might have. So that's, I think, the key thing. AI can help people be proactive.
Sure. That's great. Now, you also mentioned hybrid care models that combine in-person with AI support. Is that some of what you're referring to, or is that
That different? Is what I'm referring to, because there's a shortage of workers right now in the home care space and in the senior living space. If there's jobs that are comparable, a lot of people are going out for jobs that pay better and are not as hard to do, especially home care, which is a pretty difficult job physically. Can you do a combination of remote monitoring, especially during the off hours, because AI stays up 24 hours a day, but people do not. So in the off hours, can you do something with remote monitoring that would make the person, the worker, smarter about what's going on? And that's called, known as a hybrid care model, which we monitor the situation when we're not here and combine it with what we know when we are here. So key to actually doing something around prediction.
That's great. So you've argued that older adults should use all tech unless specific limitations call for adaptations.
That's right.
How should the industry rethink age tech in light of this?
So I've made the case so far. I'm not sure everybody's running out and running with it, but I've made the case that all tech, and that's a great example. This phone is a great, I'll stay with my phone example. It's the best example. Okay. This phone is all tech. You can go to the settings and you can pick up the accessibility settings on this phone. If you have low vision or you have a hearing loss, you can change the settings to accommodate specific conditions. You can also configure many things about the device, make the volume louder, make the picture bigger, make the print bigger. You can do lots of things to it, but it's a standard phone and it's used by 16-year-olds and used by 60-year-olds. And to me, this is all tech. And, all the devices I look around in my home, they're all tech. They can all be configured and modified. You think about the volume control in a TV, or the ability to add headphones so that if you're hearing impaired, you can hear the TV. There's so many things you can do to modify all tech to meet the needs of specific individuals that to have something specifically classified as age tech seems to me very focused on possibly the disability side of aging and not so much about the universal, everybody gets to use the stuff that everybody uses.
Sure, that's a great point. Sticking with your example of the iPhone, I remember, probably, 12, 15 years ago, my mother-in-law, may she rest in peace, was excited to get a Jitterbug phone because she just wanted a phone that had big buttons and would make calls. I mean, she was tech savvy, reasonably so at the time, but, that's the sort of thing where the iPhone can do everything that the Jitterbug would do. You just have to configure it properly.
It can do everything except one thing. So this came up in my neighborhood recently. If you want to call 911, it's best done on a landline. Many areas offer free landline service. Many phone companies offer free landline service, particularly for 911. 911 on a landline gets you directly to a response center that can be prepared to a dispatch center that could send an ambulance if you need an ambulance. If I use my iPhone to call 911, they're going to ask me where I am. That's part one. Part two is I may have a connection that gets dropped. Part three is they have to ask you, do you want us to stay on the phone until the ambulance arrives or until someone arrives? There's a lot of dialogue in an emergency call with an iPhone, not just an iPhone, but any cell phone. And people think they don't need landlines. But you can get a landline and not use it to call anybody. You can use it for 911. And I would say, I think it's too bad that we're in a cell phone only world now. And we lost something. And especially older adults, a lot of them still have landlines. They should remember that the 911 call on this device is not nearly as good as it is on a landline.
That's wise words. Thank you for that. So as 73 million baby boomers age into their 80s, as you mentioned earlier, starting in January of next year, what do you expect to change or not change about their relationship with consumer tech?
Well, for one thing, they're way more savvy about technology than the last decade of 80-year-olds. That's point one. Two, the life expectancy is longer. And so if you make it to 65 in the U.S. now, you're likely to make it to your mid-80s. On average, independent of your chronic conditions or whatever you have going on. So, the main other thing is that people want to connect to their family members. And it's not going to work if you have the kind of cell phone that doesn't have a screen. If you want a text message, if you want to do iPhone tools like FaceTime and things like that, that type of cell phone doesn't work for people anymore. And I think older adults, as they get into their 70s and 80s, know that. And they're big buyers of devices that help them stay connected. iPad is nice because it's big, but iPhone is useful because it's portable.
Sure.
And other cell phones, not all the Android devices of the same characteristics. So it's not specific to the iPhone. So.
Sure. And what I have experienced from some of the folks I've talked to, and we do a lot of qualitative focus groups and such, it seems as if the older adults, and some of it is just the nature of, the older adults now are they were, 10 years younger, 10 years ago. But it seems to me as if through the pandemic, they've almost leapfrogged where they would have been normally because of the fact that they had to use tech, as you said, to stay in touch with people, to access shopping, to access entertainment, to do all kinds of tasks. So it feels like we have moved along a lot quicker in the older adult population with technology, probably because of the pandemic.
Well, you remember seeing those videos, maybe if you didn't see them, I just described it to you, of people standing outside a senior living organization, looking at their relatives who are behind the glass on the other side, and shouting at them or otherwise trying to, we were caught a day late and a dollar short, I would say, in the pandemic. The readiness of older adults to have communication with them as they got isolated and left alone and in really horrible situations, it was a shock. And nobody wants to be in that situation again. And so it's very important that devices and technology training on how to use the devices becomes part of the aging experience. And I think increasingly that's the case.
Good point. So you've called out AI as the most promising area of innovation. Mm-hmm. Where do you see the most practical and immediate applications for AI and aging services?
Well, my great example is ChatGPT and the conversational aspects of it, and the fact that I can ask a question and it remembers what I asked for follow-up questions, and the whole conversation is retained, and it can even be saved. And it's basically, if you're really trying to learn something, AI tools are wonderful for that. If you're trying to combine a whole set of data in order to predict something, AI tools are wonderful for that. Problem solving, prediction, responses to questions you may have, I think AI is wonderful. It's abused and misused and confused by users as to, this nonsense about everything is hallucinating and it's, making up stuff. And the media loves that. And so many articles have been written about the horrors of inappropriately used or trained or responding AI tools. Every time there's a new incident, by the way, you see a new article.
Sure.
Something like that. But
it's that's sensational.
Throwing out the, you know what that is? That's throwing out the baby with the bathwater, a cliche we used to use many years ago. The AI technology itself, that it can understand language, it can combine language to information that's related to the language. It can converse in multiple languages. It can help you with prediction. It can look at your history and do something with it. It's pretty remarkable.
That's great. That's wonderful. And I do think there's some really important points in there that it feels like, just anecdotally, society is embracing it a lot more, because I think people are seeing the actual application. Whereas, 2, 3, 4 years ago, it seemed almost like science fiction. It seemed like, when will it become sentient? When will it take over the world?
Yeah.
And I think there are some practical applications, assuming that, the user understands how to use it and, still has that kind of, the ability and the capacity to actually think logically, think critically when reviewing the detail.
Well, I think most of the uses of it that are really important right now, you might think of as the B2B world. All businesses are using AI. End of story. Most healthcare organizations are starting to use AI because look at how much more data they can inhale about people with AI tools. So that's sort of the business-to-business aspects of it. Consumers are still at the, I have a question about, what was the weather last year at this time? and to get a multi-line response from some of these AI tools, and then to have the context retained for the next question, is really the state of the art, I think, for consumers. Most of them are, I'm sure, not yet ready to do much with that. But if you give it a try, it's very useful. You don't have to do anything with it. The people who serve you, the healthcare industry, all the business world, they're all using it, and they're going to use it to do a better job of helping you.
So we've seen incredible advances in technology designed to support aging, but getting it into the hands of older adults is still a challenge. What are the biggest obstacles to tech adoption among older adults today?
One is lack of awareness. It kind of stays with that. And then the unfortunate awareness from negative publicity. Those two things, and then access to training. Much of the training that people need to really do something useful with technology is actually online, and there are many places to look for it. It can be free, it can be online courses that you sign up for, but you don't necessarily need to go anywhere to train yourself on most technologies. And then some training is in the future is going to be on devices. I think it's pathetic, really, that there isn't more built-in training. When you start pounding around the screen and you pick something, I wanted to say to me, were you really trying to search or what were you actually trying to do? eventually all that will happen. And right now, for example, Gemini and maybe the Meta technologies and some are, they are basically trying to take the context of what you said and hopefully offer useful follow-on thoughts that are relevant to you. Relevance is very important here, and I think we're not there yet. It's sort of year one of relevance. It's year 2 or 3 of AI, but year 1 of relevance.
That's a great point. And you know, it is amazing how Google has changed, you know, as they have, you know, multiple times, changed the way we search, changed the way we consume data, because, you know, it used to be the sponsored links and the organic links. Well, now they're, you know, the almost the entire main screen is the AI summary of whatever your question was, which is great as a consumer, you know, but for advertisers, marketers that are trying to reach people, it just changes the whole
game. It changed the entire market completely. Yep. And that's good, because the consumer was being abused. I mean, my favorite example of this is you send an email, and in the subject of the email, you've started talking about a problem. And the next thing you know, you're shown ads that solve that problem. You weren't even searching. Yep. It was in your Gmail message. Now, to me, I think we've been abused long enough, and they got to find a new way to generate markets. And Google, that's built its entire business on search, needs to, and it is, I'm sure, waking up and saying, gee, maybe we can innovate in something else.
Sure. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they monetize, you know, the AI portion of the search.
And why not charge people for using a set of functionality that is of value to them?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely. I mean, you're willing to do that with so many other technologies. I mean, Apple's not giving away the phone.
Right. You know? Right. They certainly aren't.
Right. So, you know, we have to move into a new era. Value generates a price, and you're willing to pay it because it's value.
Sure. Good. I like that summary. So we've seen incredible advances in technology designed to support aging, but getting it into the hands of older adults is still a challenge. What are the biggest obstacles to tech adoption among older adults today?
Well, I think it's lack of awareness and lack of training and a fear of, there's a certain amount of fear of failure. You know, people are afraid to try things because they're afraid if something goes wrong, you know, their device will explode or something bad will happen to them. But I think that's a trade-off, and we're at the trade-off stage right now. And the value exceeds the fear. And it's time for people to make a trade-off and seize the day, right? Things that can help them function in their lives. And by the way, there's a ton of things, I don't even want to bother listing them, that you can't do in person anymore. And so your device and the software that is used to access services that you may benefit from, this is the future. A lot of the shops that closed up that were actually providing in-person capabilities. And so it's time to everybody to get with the program. And if they can't, if they're afraid, somebody needs to help them, whether it's a family member or it's a class at a senior center, or whatever. Sit down and help.
Sure. You know, it struck me the other day, obviously I've been aware of this, but just the juxtaposition of a mall in our area that's being torn down and then driving down the freeway and seeing, you know, distribution warehouse upon distribution warehouse being built to get the goods to us that, you know, and I'm, I certainly did nothing to help the mall, you know, economy either, because I shop online like, you know, most everybody else now. But, you know, it really is interesting how that's shifting the infrastructure of our country.
Yeah. When I was a young thing, the mall was the way teenagers would go and hang out with other teenagers. Now, everybody's isolated in their homes with their Facebook page or whatever page they're looking at, and their interaction is text, or if they're lucky, they get a phone call. It's very sad.
Yeah.
And I think the malls actually were pretty wonderful. And I didn't have a car when I was a teenager. And so I get dropped off in a mall like a lot of other people did and wander the mall. I bought very little. And I think that's the way it's been. It was a wonderful addition for socializing in the context of purchasing something. Sure. And now we get the purchasing something without the socialization.
Very true. Very true. So you referenced the fear of failure, but how do we combat the fear of failure or even the fear of being replaced among senior living staff when it comes to tech?
Well, the important thing about senior living is nobody's going to really be replaced. They're going to be redirected. And hopefully the repetitive and boring parts of their job will be replaced with ways they can interact with and care for people. Because that's one of the advantages of senior living over home care and nursing homes over home care. The advantage is there are people there who will interact with you and help you interact with other people. And once you get into the home care world, the only person interacting with you is the home care worker.
That's right.
And it's a long day. So I'm encouraging people to consider various aspects of whether it's senior living, nursing homes, senior centers, socialization offerings, events that they want to go to that involve other people, finding people online that share their interests so they can then go do something with other people, whether it's this ridiculous game, pickleball.
Courts are going up everywhere.
Yeah. So my feeling is, if you feel a need for other people, you should figure out a way to find other people and do something with them. And that will replace our sad aspect of losing them all.
Great point. So what advice would you give to community leaders who want to lead with innovation, but don't even know where to start?
For innovators?
Yeah. For community leaders
who want
to innovate or lead with innovation, but don't know where to start.
So community leaders, whether it's senior living communities or communities in the community, should look at the audience, look at their market. Who are they trying to serve? How can they figure out how best to serve them? In what language should they serve them? In what capabilities do these people apparently want, whether it's through expressing preference, or whether it's through observing them and seeing what capabilities they could want, trying out capabilities in communities that may be of interest to people. You know, I think it's really sad how much time people spend in senior living communities sitting around waiting for the next meal.
Yeah, I agree.
Also true in nursing homes, sitting around waiting for the next meal. If you're lucky, the next meal is in a social setting with other people at the table. But I think that's unfortunate. And I think the whole concept of activities and the way they're handled needs to be rethought and come up with ideas for more continuous interactions, whether it's with activities that involve other people or just with other people.
Great point. Well, the last question that I have for you is, what have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self? What have you learned in your career that you wish you could go back and say, hey, Lori, here's what you need to know?
Appreciate my mother and my grandmother. My mother, I particularly did not appreciate. And when I think about what she did for me, it's too bad. But my grandmother also, my grandmother didn't speak very much English. And the main worry about me was, did I have a boyfriend? But my grandmother was another person. I could have learned to cook things from her. I did not. I could have paid more attention to my mother, who actually had a great passion for music and communicated that with me. But instead, you know, I tried to shut my mother out like a lot of people in my young years. So, and my mother, of course, is gone. My grandmother's gone. And there's no there's no going back. So I would say appreciate older people.
That's great.
When you're young. And that's what I would say.
Well said. Well, on that note, Lori, thank you so much for giving us your time and your energy and all of your wisdom today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in to Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Thanks also to Matt Campbell, our engineer, and Dave Schaffner, our producer. I'm Derek Dunham, and we'll see you next time on Roundtable Talk.